the voice is really greater in the mix of time and the chicken lobby flavor. A poem could be safer, but the voice is really greater in the mix of time and the chicken lobby flavor. A poem could be safer, but the voice is really greater in the mix of time and the chicken lobby flavor. A poem could be safer, but the voice is really greater in the mix of time and the chicken lobby flavor. Bobby sang the silent ear. Bobby sang in my silence. Bobby sang the black onyx of the tie-dye moccasins of Yoruba. Bobby sang the black jewel sword of cards of warning. Bobby sang the mint julep of the red clef of Georgia. Sang the toe-tap aqua shoes of Brother Hines. Bobby sang the silent ear. Sang the turntail by mine. Bobby sang the force of Everest and sunshine tripping rainfall. Singing the secret war pit of the twisted line. Singing the native wicked wide-eyed look of Jupiter.
Bobby sang by Ron Allen. And we're in the last week of our open mic for the first Ron Allen Poetry Prize at the Los Angeles Poverty Department Museum, located at 440 South Broadway, downtown Los Angeles, this Friday, May the 22nd, 2015, at 6:30 p.m. And we would really be, we'll have a nice little party and all of that after. But my co-host Earlene Anthony will be talking about that a little later in the show.
Yeah.
Now, Ron Allen was one of the greatest writers and spoken word artists that I know of. He was from Detroit, Michigan, and he left us and transcended to the ether in 2010. His writing and performance was about spirituality and recovery. Let's play a little bit more of Ron Allen doing Bobby Sing.
Voice is really greater in the mix of time and the chicken lobby flavor. A poem could be safer, but the voice is really greater in the mix of time and the chicken lobby flavor. A poem could be safer, but the voice is really greater in the mix of time and the chicken lobby flavor. A poem could be safer, but the voice is really greater in the mix of time and the chicken lobby flavor. Bobby sang the silent ear. Bobby sang in my silence. Bobby sang the black onyx of the tie-dye moccasins of Yoruba. Bobby sang the black jewel sword of cards of warning. Bobby sang the mint julep of the red clef of Georgia. Sang the toe-tap aqua shoes of Brother Hines. Bobby sang the silent ear. Sang the turntail by mine. Bobby sang the force of Everest and sunshine tripping rainfall. Singing the secret war pit of the twisted line. Singing the native wicked wide-eyed look of Jupiter.
Bobby sang, I hear you.
A poem could be safer, but the voice is really greater in the mix of time and the digging Bobby flavor. A poem could be safer, but the mix is really greater in the mix of time and the digging Bobby flavor. Poem could be safer, but the voice is really greater in the mix of time and the digging Bobby flavor. Poem could be safer, but the voice is really greater in the mix of time and the digging Bobby flavor. Poem could be safer, but the voice is really greater in the mix of time and the digging Bobby flavor. Poem could be safer, but the voice is really greater in the mix of time and the digging Bobby flavor. Poem could be safer, but the voice is really greater in the mix of time and the digging Bobby flavor.
Sang by Ron Allen. Welcome to the Qumran Report. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. My name is Melvin Ishmael Johnson, coming at you live from Skid Row Studios. And I'm in the studio with my co-host, Earlene Anthony. Our call-in number is 1-800-893-9562. Now, this week on the Qumran Report, our topic is the Ron Allen Poetry Prize and If the Shoe Fits. And I'm delighted to have with us in the studios one of the participating poets, Nick Paul. Welcome to the Qumran Report.
Oh, thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Now, Nick, can you introduce yourself and tell our listening audience just a little about your background and how did you get off into poetry and all of that?
Well, I started out in Michigan. And I'm from outside of Detroit, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. And always have written poetry and always, it was never inspired though or encouraged when I was a child. So it was something I had to develop myself. And I've been doing a lot of open mic downtown and it's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. What town in Michigan?
a small town called Roseville. It's right outside of Mount Clemens.
I went to school back in Michigan. Went to college back there at Eastern Michigan University in Ypsilanti, Michigan.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah,
we used to always go into Detroit to have fun, though.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a theater group called the Blackwater Totem Pole Muggy Wump Review, and it was like a theater show that traveled all over the state and performed and did skits. And it's the kind of thing I want to do again. It's like my life is turning full circle. It's going back to what I really loved as a child. So it's an exciting time in my life.
When did you first start writing?
When I was very young, elementary school, but I never was encouraged. I always had the wrong teachers. There was this one teacher who was really good in writing, and they said, oh, we'll have to get you in his class. But for whatever reason, I was not in that class.
Mm-hmm.
So then my poetry turned into music, and I tried being a singer for a while. But at the time, the lyrics and the songs, they were so depressing. They were really good, but it was so sad.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I don't want to be miserable all my life. So I kind of leered away from the writing, thinking it couldn't really bring me joy.
Mm-hmm.
But as the years have progressed, I kept writing, but now I'm back with a vengeance, and I'm not sad anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm mad. So,
and I saw something on your card where you a paper mache artist.
I'm a paper mache artist.
Mache. Mm-hmm.
I work from recyclables, and I have a show going on right now on 6th and Spring. It's at the Hayward Hotel. They have a theater in the basement, and they have a big lobby, and all my art's
is there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I invite you all to come and see it.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Was it on display during the art walk?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, every art walk. An art walk is always interesting because you never know who's going to come in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes people just kind of tornado into the place, and a lot of times homeless people come in and they don't really know where they are. They just want a place to sit. So, you know, it's okay. I got company for the night if nobody's viewing, you know, so it's interesting.
Now, when did you start writing poetry? When did you get back into it?
I was with Theater of Angels.
Mm-hmm. Company of Angels.
Company of Angels.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they were getting together a show, and it was spoken word. So me, I have a very active imagination. So I wrote this story, and it was part of the show, and that was really like the key and the ignition to get back to writing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm more focused now on my writing than I have ever been.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just flowing out of me. It's like, okay, it's coming out really fast. I'll try to keep up with it. And I'm channeling something, you know, and I know my higher power has a lot to do with it. God has something to do with what I have to say. And it may not be the language of what some people may like, because I'm a very street person. And sometimes I get a little vulgar with my poetry, but it comes from the heart, and it's a poor man's poetry for people who can understand it. It's very, almost like a nursery rhyme. The rhymes are very simple, you know, like skip a rope kind of thing. But people enjoy it, and I'm really happy that people are liking it.
Yeah, I think it's good. Now, I would like to play a short clip from last Friday's Ron Allen's open mic at the Los Angeles Poverty Department.
I feel you. I feel your fear when you look at me, when I move too fast and appear before you unexpectedly. I feel your aggression, see it in your eyes as you size me up and try and tell yourself, I think I can take him. Perhaps I should shoot first, as he is dangerous and may be harmed.
But I did it in rhyme because I love to rhyme. Here I am in the store, 34 years clean, I got no more. Everyone asking what I'm staying here for. I'm 34 years clean, I got no more. I've got a friend got sober today, asked me if I had something important to say. I shook my head and stared at the wall. Just keep coming back is what I said, that's all. Just keep coming back. People, they ask me, how did you do it? sober through the plague, through the Twin Towers? Why didn't you just say screw it?
Child, when do you think is the time to love somebody the most? When they done good and made things right for everybody? Well, then you ain't through learning, child. Because it's when he's at his lowest. And he can't do no more because the world done flipped him so. When you start to measure somebody, child, you measure right. You consider what that man's been.
Mean tripping off of you. A timeless traveler trapped in the crack of time, trapped in our minds. The imaginary tale of an actor playing the part, performing in the game of life. From darkness to light, some see the light, some is the light.
To the very last breath.
Okay, what's the name of it again?
My excitement about life.
Pockets, a fraction, attainable, technosphere, treasure, silver brains, nanologic, Steve Job limbs, investor jaws, law and prodigies, taste trucks and toll, attainable, dollar heads, tattoo, smarty, downsized brilliance, drone tongue, degree, cop, biohazard, club, baby techs, dogs teach, cardboard culture, Iran, silver book, ran hacking carts, rifle, halos, robotic ribs, Republican crack, AIDS moms, attainable, African schoolgirl student.
Okay. Look, let me ask you this, Nick. How important is the creative arts to the concept of recovery?
Oh, it's very important. I don't know if I'd be able to stay clean and sober, which I can say I have for over 34 years, mm-hmm. Without my art. It's very, very important. It's therapeutic, mm-hmm. you know. With my art and my poetry, when I wake up in the morning, I feel like a kid on Christmas Day. It's like, what can I do today? What can I create? Mm-hmm. I'm compulsive about it. And it brings me great joy and... it gets rid of the demons. It turns off my head. You know, if I start writing or creating something, I'm into that project instead of thinking about what my problems are. And, of course, we're taught on my program, it's best to work with others. So mm-hmm. when I start working with other people, I can get a better vision of what's going on in my life. Mm-hmm. You know.
And then do you think sometime in pursuit of the creative arts, that lead a lot of persons into substance abuse?
Some people, yeah. There's a lot of very famous people who go crazy and burn out because of it, because of bad management. Mm-hmm. It's not really their art. I think the art is the gift, and it can be abused by those in power to turn it into a horrible thing. There's a big difference between creating art and selling art. Mm-hmm. When you create art, it's a beautiful thing. When you have to sell it, it's a business. And if you don't know that business, it can be a nightmare. Mm. You know, if you want to get into the business of selling art or being an actor or a singer, you better go to school and you better study all about business, because it's a business to rip you off. Mm-hmm. And everybody gets that if they're not educated.
Show business. It's
yeah.
a business.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember about, I was reading about the bio of Miles Davis. Mm-hmm. And when he was a young man, they had the great saxophone player, Charlie Parker. Mm. And he could do so many amazing things, you know, in his art, in his music. And they thought it was because he was on heroin, you know, he used to do heroin and all that kind of stuff like that. And this is what led Miles Davis as a young man mm-hmm. to try heroin. He messed around and got hooked. Took him a long time to kick it. And I was thinking, and so many people that pursued trying to find the secret of these gifted artists, a lot of times it's just a God-given gift that they have.
And what's mm-hmm. really sad is Miles Davis was really envious of Sly Stone from Sly and the Family Stone. Mm. And I love Sly and the Family Stone. I was brought up on that. So I was here for a free concert they had up down the way, Angel Flight at the top of the hill. And Rufus was performing, and they brought Sly Stone out of the audience and said, mm-hmm. we have a special guest here. So they started doing dance to the music, and everybody went nuts. Now there's like, I don't know if it's true, but I think it's true. He's fallen on really yeah. hard times that yeah. he's living down the street. So this song is going, and people are literally jumping up on the chairs and screaming. And he sang like three words and twirled and left the stage. And they continued yeah. the song, but it was like,
yeah, yeah.
poor Sly.
Yeah, because he was, I think he's doing a little bit better now because he's beginning to get a lot of those residuals that he wasn't getting.
Oh, good.
Yeah, but, yeah, I remember reading a big article when he was living in his van and mm-hmm, all that kind of mm-hmm. stuff. And I do remember the situation with Miles. And what it was is that Miles, at that particular time, you know, he's doing all this classical mm-hmm. jazz, and people like Sly and the Family Stone, they was doing sort of like little rock, yeah, pop, little yeah, music,
yeah.
and they would get these huge crowds, and it caused Miles to change the direction to bring some of that into his jazz
mm-hmm.
form, which mm-hmm. really worked for him, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I love Miles Davis. Mm-hmm.
Oh,
my God.
Yeah, great musician.
So wonderful.
What piece? Let's do a couple pieces. What's okay. the first piece you're going to do?
All for right. I'll do this one I did the other night first, and I got several, but I got two I can do.
Okay.
This one's called Go On Back to Silver Lake.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Go back to Silver Lake or wherever you may roam. Downtown LA's a different world. It will never be your home. Panhandlers on the street, they don't want you here. With your nose in the air, designer jeans upon your rear. You're about as welcome as a snowball is in hell. You reek of pride and privilege. What an awful smell. You step around the homeless, never look them in the eye, never digging in your pocket, not once did you ever try. Never thinking with compassion or gratitude for your wealth, for the roof above your head, your premium state of health. Walking blindly on your cell phone, you step into the street, unaware of your surroundings as you stumble with your feet. You trip into the gutter as your cell phone starts to fly. Breaks upon the pavement makes you want to die. And no one helps you up. No one extends a hand. No one shows compassion for someone who is so grand. And there you lay in the gutter with rancid Pall Mall butts. People step over you and they wonder if you're nuts. They're not giving any money as you extend your hand. I just needed some help up. Why don't they understand? They think that I am homeless. They think I belong here. They think I'm just a throwaway and they wish I'd disappear. Your vision becomes blurry. When you fell, you hit your head. Your canceled health insurance starts bleeding from your head. And you cannot think clearly, standing people looking down, pinching their nose and smirking as you crawl upon the ground. And no one seems to get it how forlorn you are, screaming, "Get out of the road!" as they drive by in their car. You never thought it would happen to someone as nice as you, someone so clean and spiritual, and a good Republican too. Night falls and you become part of the walking dead. No memory of who you are or how much blood you've bled. And downtown is your home now, and will be for a while. You chipped your teeth upon the curb and now sport a funny smile. And Silver Lake doesn't want you in its loving arms anymore. You're much too bruised and beat up. You're not beautiful like before. If you could get your thoughts together, you'd leave downtown so fast. But thunder rumbles in dark alleys, and there's rain in the forecast. Go on back to Silver Lake. Downtown will never be your home. Go on back to Silver Lake and take your damn cell phone.
Yeah, let's talk about what was the inspiration for that. How did it come? You spent a lot of time in Silver Lake up in that area?
Yeah, I lived in Silver Lake for over 20 years, and then I managed a couple apartment buildings, and I had words with the owner, mm-hmm. and was evicted from my apartment and was kind of upset about that, but didn't have to drink and use over it. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Now, Silver Lake, is Silver Lake a different community? What's the comparison of Silver Lake and, say, the downtown area?
It's like day and night. Mm-hmm. You know, downtown, you see people walking down the street, which I love. There's like hundreds of people out all hours of the night. And Silver Lake is, there's like a lot of money out there, a lot of pretentiousness. It used to be a very fun art place, but then it changed like overnight. Like the past like 10 years, it got really, mm-hmm. you know.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's take a little quick break for our community calendar. Then we come back with our in-studio guest, the poet Nick Paul.
This is the community calendar of upcoming events. Many of the Skid Row poets have been waiting for this. Friday, May the 22nd, 2015, from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m., is the Ron Allen Poetry Contest Reading and Party. This is presented by the Los Angeles Poverty Department, and it will be held at the Los Angeles Poverty Department Museum, located at 440 South Broadway on the second floor, downtown Los Angeles. And there is a first, second, and third prize will be awarded for the best poetry that has been submitted. All are invited to attend. Come out and have some fun and remember Ron Allen. There will be lots more going on. So for information, please contact 213-413-1077 or info@losangelespovertydepartment.org. This is a kickoff of a statewide coordinated action to end solitary confinement. This Saturday, May the 23rd, 2015, at 3 p.m., Drama Stage Qumran, L.A. Labor Force, and Public Work Improvisational Theater presents End Solitary Confinement for Youth in Detention. And it's a reader's theater of If the Shoe Fits. It's a free event, wheelchair and disability accessible. All are welcome to attend. The location is the Chuco Justice Center, 1137 East Redondo Boulevard, Inglewood, California, 90302. It's three blocks west of Crenshaw, one block north of Florence. After the reading, there will be time for sharing stories, discussing strategies, and taking action. For more information, please contact 310-704-3217 or email lalaborfest@gmail.com. If you have a community event that you would like announced on our show, send the information to dramastage1@yahoo.com. Attention, Earlene Anthony. The call-in number for our show is 800-893-9562. Now back to our host.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Earlene Anthony. We're back with our in-studio guest, the poet Nick Paul. Now, before we get back to our discussion and some more readings by our in-studio guest, I'd like to play a clip from the original performance of If the Shoe Fit at the Fishbowl on the campus of USC. It's about 4 minutes long.
Herman Wallace was a courageous fighter, but just a political prisoner to this system locked up in conditions of torture in solitary confinement for 41 years. On October 1st, 2013, Herman Wallace was finally freed. free after a federal judge ruled that his original indictment in the killing of a prison guard had been unconstitutional. 3 days later, on Friday morning, October 4th, 2013, Herman Wallace died of cancer in New Orleans. He was 71 years old.
Not hold on to normalcy, for normal in an abnormal world is craziness. This fact is the battle of a shoe prisoner's soul, the death grip of sanity. The irony of it all is that for a shoe prisoner to hold on to his sanity, he must embrace, accept his insanity. It has been said for hundreds of years that those whom the gods wish to destroy first, they drive mad. That is the shoe objective.
I now face the rest of my life as Supermax, locked in a concrete tomb, dying in complete isolation. I have been approved to be transferred to this torture facility by psychological professionals who affirm that I am sane enough to be driven crazy.
I shall not die. I shall not die a thousand deaths of compromise, giving my name in exchange for food or blankets. I will bite my own arms to smother my screams and rob you of the satisfaction when you disassemble me. I shall not die shamefully, my chin against my chest, kneeling before the humiliating hole I dug for myself, waiting upon the pistol shot. I will not always refuse the blindfold. I shall not die abandoned and alone, obliterated from the memories of those I love. My fate never questioned. Someone will always stand in the rain outside your office window. My name on a cardboard sign. No matter how many times you cut my throat or hang me from my own bedsheet, bludgeon me with your nightstick, or fire your bullets into my brain. Whether you encircle me in South African Bucina, or a Coca-Cola factory in Bolivia, or alley behind the stone wall, or a prison in the heart of it all, I shall not die. A million times, I shall not die. You will only get my court.
A quote by Fyodor Dostoevsky to remember. The degree of civilization in a society can be judged by entering its prisons.
My name is Robert Stockton. This is my poem, Living Tomb.
Suddenly we found ourselves without the world's care, where the cold and desolate embrace our stare.
Through endless mazes we walk in chains, and with each passing day it seems less and less strange.
With the will not broken, only tested with time, we will send words to our loved ones, we're doing just fine.
There's nothing to compare it to but small personal lies. We do anything to keep away needless tears in their eyes.
New rehabilitation as a castaway, whether young or old, means we're tossed into a place with no hope to hold. To escape, we walk circles under a steel screen, trying to find a way to kiss the sun's beam.
We stand alone arguing what to do. No one really knows the pressures we stew. Rules come and go, changing direction like the wind. When you think you found comfort, a new struggle begins.
Some stand agitated at the back of their cells.
Some scream out insane and broken up yells.
You may have a glimpse of what we all see,
or a mental picture of a soul who's not free.
But no one can really see behind the great walls that gleam, that gloom,
or walk where we walk, embraced by a living tomb.
Okay, that's If the Shoe Fits, which will be performed this Saturday, May the 23rd, 2015, at 3 o'clock p.m. at the Chuco Justice Center, located at 1137 East Redondo Boulevard, Inglewood, California, 90302. Okay, let's get back and I want to talk a little about that homeless count that they got. There's, just revealed that it was an 18% increase from last year's count. Mm-hmm. But in the downtown area, I saw in the downtown news that's in the Skid Row in the downtown area, you had an 89% increase. And that is a lot. So we're going to read, I'm going to hear some more of your poetry in a minute, but I want to ask you, what are your thoughts the first time that you came to the Skid Row area?
It was shocking, you know. So many people, and it's such a diverse community. You know, people think Skid Row is one thing or the other, and then people who don't know what Skid Row is all about, they're very opinionated, mm-hmm. you know. Like, I was talking to this lady the other day, and I was saying how I had wrote this poem about Skid Row that had a sense of humor. It was that Skid Row comes to Broadway. Mm-hmm. And she, of course, took it offensively and said, well, I don't find anything funny about Skid Row. When I see those people, I get very sad. And I thought, well, that's good. And then I talked to her later, and she says, well, you know, some of those people, they just want to be down there. And she focused on the some of those people. Like, do you have the names of those people, those ones in particular that you're talking about? And people like that would give all their energy to some of those people that just want to sleep mm-hmm. under the stars when they don't know that there is, of course, drug addicts, alcoholics, people who are homeless and have all their mind together. And it's just a very diverse community. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't say it's all one. And we're all, like, within inches of living on Skid Row.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've had days or months where I just don't care about anything and don't want any kind of responsibility. And I could see how a mind slip could go into that, you know. But then there's people down there who don't have that, and they just lost everything, and they can't get anything from, can't get any help or direction, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, when you first came from Michigan, and you came to Silver Lake first?
I came to Sepulveda, and I used to pronounce it Sopavita, like the cheese, Sopavita.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, I came to, and I didn't think it was going to be anything like it was. I came to Hollywood Boulevard. That's where I came, right into Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
And I had saw all these pamphlets and magazines about how glamorous Hollywood was. And Cher and Barbara Streisand would be walking down Hollywood Boulevard and waving. So I got there, and my first impression was, it's downtown Detroit with palm trees. That's what I thought.
Yeah.
And, you know. That's,
mm-hmm. Now, how about in Silver Lake? You spent a lot of time there. What's the homeless situation like there?
There's homeless in Silver Lake. Nothing like it is downtown. Maybe a quarter of what we have down here. There's the population of it. But here, it's like everywhere. It's mm-hmm. like absolutely everywhere. And it interacts with you no matter where you're going. You know, like in Starbucks, I go into that Starbucks on 6th and Spring.
Yeah.
And there's some mornings when I go in there to get my coffee, I just can't be in there. It's like a homeless camp,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I say that with respect, but it's like people, they don't have any other place to go, so they just sit there with all their bags and suitcases and their belongings, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's very sad, and I see a lot of madness sometimes too, which is scary.
Yeah.
Because that's what bothers me the most. It's like, when somebody just goes nuts, and normal people look nuts. Mm-hmm. And that's the scary ones, the mm-hmm. ones that don't look spooky, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden they go crazy. So there's a lot of that down there. And it's very sad that Ronald Reagan did that back in the 80s, where he just closed down all the mental institutions and threw everybody into the street. That's unforgivable, you mm-hmm. know, for a president of our United States to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I will always have a grudge towards him.
Yeah.
For that.
And it was sort of like a paradox that happened, because up until that time, the fact that they were incarcerating mentally ill instead of trying to treat them or integrate them back into the community. But the main problem, the promise that they broke is that when they let the mentally ill out, they also promise resources, support system, and enough funds to go along with that. That's the promise that they broke. We're going to get back in a minute talking a little bit more about the homeless, but let's read another piece. What's the second piece you got for us?
I'll bring this one. I just pulled these out of the book. I have ones I probably would rather read, but this one's a good one. I wrote this one the other day. It's called "I'm Not Confrontational." Trying not to be sensational, but I'm just not capable of being confrontational, of being confrontational. We make plans, you don't show up. How could this be any more corrupt? Never met no one like you. Instead of one face, you have two. You ruin my day, you have the power to ruin a picnic like a summer shower. And when you call, you make it seem like I was the one who's being mean. I have a feeling this won't change. Time to start to rearrange. Taking control so I'll be saved from this torture, from this grave. I know I gotta set you free because you're no damn good for me. The smoky ring from a cigarette is the last thing from me you'll get. So I say goodbye and kiss my ass. See you in church, step on the gas. Where I'm headed, who can tell? But you, my friend, can go to hell. And tell them all I said hello. For many there I've come to know. Many there we've danced and sung on condemned swings. How high we swung. In closing now, I'll say for sure, this friendship smelled like cow manure. Don't want to be sensational. I don't think I'm capable of being confrontational, of being confrontational. That one was kind
All
of
right.
silly.
let me ask my co-host, what are your thoughts about what's happening downtown, the homeless situation?
I've also been homeless at one time, and I've been out of the area for a long time, but it seems like every time I come back, it seemed like more and more people are homeless. And when I say homeless, I mean living in the tents, just sitting on the sidewalk, even in the cardboard boxes, it seems like more. And on the overpass, when I come down on the 18 or 16 bus right there on the overpass freeway, there are more tents that have been encamped there. And also under the freeways, there are more. Mm-hmm. And it's overwhelming. But I think if the ones that can do something about it would not just lump the homeless into one bunch, because, like Nick say, there are a lot of different sectors of people that are homeless. If they would deal with each sector, for instance, veterans, people that have just been unemployed, don't have monies, and then there are the mentally ill, and of course there are alcoholics and drug addicts and so on. But if they would deal with each sector instead of just lumping them all together, I think they would make a greater impact.
Okay. Well, what are your thoughts? What do you think some of the solutions from your time down here? What do you think some of the needs that could help impact in solving the homeless problems down here?
Well, I think there was talk about making Skid Row a community where they would have a spokesperson. I don't know if you would call that the mayor of Skid Row or somebody to represent them and say, this is what's happening. This needs to be changed. It's almost like they're trying to make it disappear, you know. Saturday night, they had this big concert, and they shut off all these streets, and only the invited could come to see this show, right? And the music, I mean, I love the kind of music they played. It was like trance industrial, but not that kind. The kind that they were playing wasn't mine. And it was so loud, it was shaking the building. And it was so sad because they had this huge fence all around these streets, and the homeless are sleeping on the outside of the fence. Mm. You know, there's like wheelchairs that are turned upside down, and they're using the seat of the wheelchair for a pillow. You know, very sad, you know, and I see stuff, and that makes me really angry. But I think if they had more representation in government of people who knew what was happening and say, you want this to change, then this is what we have to do. And they keep talking about restoring Broadway, which is wonderful. They have all these gorgeous theaters, but those theaters are tough. They've been around for a couple hundred years, and they'll be here long after we're gone.
Yeah.
Help the homeless, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Get some of that dough out of your pocket and bake some bread with it, you know?
Okay. Well, I hope you read that piece about Broadway. Did you bring that with you?
I think so.
Okay. Now, but before we go there, because that's the, I'm going to have you read one more piece, and I hope you brought that with him, because I think that's a real revealing
very good piece.
Oh, thanks.
And, but what I like to do now, I like to play a clip from a speech I did a few years ago about solving the homeless problem.
Okay.
I'd like to say, now I am a veteran. I'm a Vietnam veteran, 1969 to 1971. Can I tell you my age? Now, and not only am I a veteran, but I come from a family of veterans. My out of a family of seven males and two females, six of us served in the military. Three in the Army, two in the Air Force, and I served in the United States Marine Corps. So this is why this is such an important issue to me. And not only that, since we've been working in the Skid Row area, one of the things that we notice is how many veterans that's living in the streets. See, and we're going to talk about that in a little while when we do our monologue. And so what we try to do with Drama Stage School Run, we feel that people talk so much about the problems, that everybody knows the problems because it's amplified. You can read it in the paper and all that kind of stuff. What we try to talk about is solutions. Solutions. What is the solutions to the homeless problem? Now here's what we come up with. Because we talk to other homeless, people who have been homeless veterans, and we want to get their opinions on what do they think it takes to solve the homeless problem. And here's where we at. I think the first step in solving the homeless problem is make the homeless problem the homeless veteran problem. That's the starting point. By making it the homeless veterans problem, you put it on the shoulders of the United States government, who sent all of these young men over to fight in all of these particular wars and things like that, and come back traumatized, etc., like that. So we feel that it is also the duty of the American government to finance the solutions to it. Not just the non-veterans who's laying in the street. We feel that the starting point, make the homeless problem, the homeless veterans problem, get the American government to finance some think tanks where you can get some of the best minds in the United States, get them together, make the government pay for it, come up with some solutions, and then spread that solutions out to the rest of the homeless in terms of solving that. Now, what can the interfaith community do right now to make a dent in the homeless problem? Number one, I'm gonna talk about Los Angeles, because Los Angeles is the homeless capital. See, it's the homeless capital of the United States. Not only is this the homeless capital, you probably got more millionaires here in Los Angeles, kind of Los Angeles, probably anywhere else in the United States. But you also got the blight of people laying down there in the Skid Row area down there. So here's the second part of doing something right now. We feel that the three major religions, the religious institutions, can also work with the city
find out all of these empty properties around here, to either buy these empty properties, rent these empty properties, and start programming what the Prophet Muhammad, what Moses, and what Jesus taught. It's right there in the scripture. You know, they started off, the Messiah Jesus, when he announced his messiahship. It's tied into that in Isaiah on what they were supposed to be doing. You know, working with people coming up out of prison, people in need and all that kind of stuff. And the brother Umar, he mentioned, it's tied into the scripture of Islam. It's also tied into the scripture of the Torah. See, so we feel that if these three major religions buy, rent some of this empty property, start programming, start picking some of the people up that's on Skid Row, start bringing them into some of these houses, and at the same time provide support systems for them.
Okay, that's a little clip that I did about what I think it takes to solve the homeless problem. We'll talk about that a little bit more. Because in a minute, I want to talk about the Homeless Microscope Homeless Solution Think Tank and Project Reconnect. Because I see one of the major problems that's keep any solutions from happening down here in the downtown and Skid Row area is the fact that you have all of these different sectors who fail to work together as a unit to solve the problem. The business community, the activist community, the service providers, the man and woman laying in the street, the regular community. And so I just want to read something. It's a proposal for getting the research that the community can trust. And I think this is what's needed. You got to have the research that the business community can trust, the activist community, the service providers community. You got to have the same research. So that means you have to have the same input. You have to have input from all of these sectors to come up with a problem. Because no matter how we've already proven that no matter how much money, you can put millions and millions of dollars. I think last year they put something like $118 million in trying to solve this problem. And then they look around and they say it's an 18% increase, but we see in the downtown area, it's over 80% increase in the amount of homeless population. So what happened, the more money that you put into solving this homeless problem, the more you create a bureaucracy, the more you create jobs for this bureaucracy that have no incentive to solve the homeless problem because they'd be putting themselves out of a job. So we come up with what we call the Microscope Homeless Solution Think Tank. And what it is, it's a Microscope Homeless Solution Think Tank. It's a group of 10 college students who will interview 24 stakeholders, participants from the Skid Row community about some of the major problems in the Skid Row community and possible solutions to solving the problem. And then the second part of that is Project Reconnect. The goal of this project is to utilize the research information from the Microscope Homeless Solution Think Tank and implement a dual plan to transition tent dwellers in the Skid Row area into transitional and permanent housing in the downtown Skid Row and other areas of the community. So out of this, we need to produce the community, all segments of the community need to have input into the solution so all of these different segments can trust each other and work as a unit to come up with a solution. See, it's not about money. They already tried that. See, you got to have something that would unify all of these segments to work together instead of fighting against each other like kids. All right, let's Let's hear another piece. You found a piece on Broadway?
No, unfortunately, I don't have it. My printer isn't working, but I have this other one.
Okay, let's hear something else. Right.
Yes. All right. This one's called You're Trying Too Hard. You're trying not to lose your cool. You're trying not to lose your mind. You've never studied much in school. You've never learned to be unkind. You're trying hard to not grow old, to keep your secrets to yourself. You've never shared your heart of gold. You've kept it polished on the shelf. Buses run on time most days, but on many days they don't. Friends will promise to drop by, but many times they won't. The city's full of little dogs and homeless men and drunks. Women promenade like models, buying drugs from skateboard punks. A fascinating place to live. You sometimes stop right in your tracks and stare up at the sky-high buildings while others are staring back. 101 new stores to shop and drink and cruise and eat. Life downtown sometimes is bitter and chewy and salty and sweet. The driving rhythm of the congas on 4th and Broadway meet. The enchanting Hare Krishnas whirling down the street. Some folks look like damaged mannequins, but in fact are very real. They sit cross-legged in the gutter, bitter from their lousy deal. Rich men with snakeskin briefcases dodge the dirty city gnomes and live high in fancy art lofts in their million-dollar homes. They sip their Joe at Starbucks, having board meetings on their cells, talking all about big business and management and sales. Live music plays on crowded sidewalks. Some toss spare change in their hat. The meek, they will not live forever. They're okay with that. Sirens scream and prophets roam, declaring that the end is near. And if you believe you're born again, well, then, baby, the coast is clear. Policemen strut all dressed in black, creating much more harm than good. They're innocent victims all being shot down for just being misunderstood. All the nickels in my pocket, all the quarters will not pay. Peace of mind cannot be saved for. Spend it on that rainy day. There's a waitress laughing, watching, smiling, as the fat man starts to choke. 911 needs to be dialing. There's no punchline to this joke. Smiling faces now are glaring. Shadows stretch across the floor. All are welcome here who enter, and then they go and slam the door. All is quiet, then a gunshot. Tell me, what's your favorite song? Is your sister a dead ringer, or is she just deadly wrong? In my head, the words just tumble. I don't know what I will write down. I make no sense, but there's a rhythm, and the rhythm goes round and round. Thank you all for listening and for keeping very still. You would never hurt my feelings, but you had some time to kill. So time's blood is on your hands right now, and you cannot wash it off. You breathe in for salvation, and it only makes you cough. You cannot change the things you haven't done. So why do you have remorse? You have no destination. You have no charted course. You have no bus fare home tonight. You have no place to stay. You have no one to keep you warm. You have no God to pray. You have no sense to just say no. You sulk in your own defeat. Life is a banquet stretched out before you, but still you will not eat. You can't tell yourself I love you, for what would others think? You would roll around on roses before you'd let them know you stink. For your friends, you would slay dragons, but never any in your own defense. Instead of building bridges for tomorrow, you go and build a fence. You feel like you've been cheated. I'll get them back, you swear. You enter rooms to argue and you suck out all the air. In order to stop your own destruction, you have to quench its thirst. To truly love all of God's children, you have to love your own self first. Feeling like you don't fit in, well, mister, join the crowd. Tired of holding it all in? Then release it and be proud. Don't become defeated. Don't kneel down to their cause. You really are terrific. You're deserving of applause. We all feel lost and stranded. We fight our own demons every day. In the darkness, we may stumble, but we always find our way. But we always find our way. But we always find our way. You're trying not to lose your cool. You're trying not to lose your mind. You never studied much in school. You never learned to be unkind. You're trying hard to not grow old. You keep your secrets to yourself. You've never shared your heart of gold. You've kept it polished on the shelf.
Okay, poet Nick Paul, we winding down. Thank you very much. This is Melvin Johnson with the Qumran Report. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. We close the show with the song that opened the show, Bobby Sings by Ron Allen.
Voice is really greater in the mix of time and the chicken body flavor. A poem could be safer, but the voice is really greater in the mix of time and the chicken body flavor. The poem could be safer, but the voice is really greater in the mix of time and the chicken body flavor. A poem could be safer, but the voice is really greater in the mix of time and the chicken body flavor. Bobby sang the silent ear. Bobby sang at my silence. Bobby sang the black onyx of the tie-dye moccasins of Yoruba. Bobby sang the black jewel sword of Cobb the Morning. Bobby sang the mint julep of the Red Clef, Georgia, sang the toe tap aqua shoes of Brother Hines. Bobby sang the silent ear.